Hello and welcome again to the Knowledge Without College podcast. This is your host, Patrick Butler, and today I have yet again another interview, this time with the CEO of SunGrade Solar. His name is Aaron Katz, and again, I'm thinking, hey, who do I know that would be interesting? And I've known Aaron for a couple years, worked with him at a couple different businesses, SunGrade being the second one I work with him at, and he's a really interesting guy. He's sort of not your typical CEO, not what you think when you hear CEO. His personality is very different than that you normally think of when you think of like the person running a company, especially a large solar company. And he's a really interesting guy, has a really interesting story. A lot of things I didn't know going into this podcast. Again, one of the coolest things about doing these interviews is that you get to ask people questions you might not normally ask them and learn a lot of stuff about them that you might not have learned otherwise. So I had a lot of fun making this episode, and I think it's really cool just to continue to talk to more and more people that are doing, bigger things. Aaron has a much longer career than the previous people that I've interviewed, and so it's cool to get the background on that. I'm continuing to work on my interview questions, and I hope you all are seeing the improvements here. But, you know, again, as always, if you have any feedback for me, send it my way. If you like this episode, please subscribe. Please follow me on Instagram and the Knowledge Without College podcast, and enjoy this episode with Aaron Katz. With the Knowledge Without College podcast, and today I have with me Aaron Katz. He is the CEO of SunGrade Solar, the company I work for, and he started a few other successful solar companies in the past, but we're going to dive into Aaron's previous experience, and my first question to everyone lately has been, I'm interested in finding out like how college affected your career, and if it had a significant impact on what you're doing now, and if you foresaw this kind of where you're at right now coming from that experience. So, I mean, first off, I really don't even know. Did you go to college?
I did. I have a funny history, and that's sort of a funny question for me. I actually dropped out of high school twice.
Really?
Not once, but in the rare double dropout. Dropped out, went back briefly, dropped out again, and then I got my GED. So I didn't even graduate from high school, but I did the math. I was at my mom had put me in a private school, and I wasn't really happy the second time around, both times obviously, but the second time around, I just was like, look, this is ridiculous. We're paying all this money. If I drop out, I can nail my GED. I'll start college before I would have graduated high school.
Yeah.
So I did. I dropped out. It took like, I don't know, a year or so to do another stuff and get my GED. Mm-hmm. Actually worked with Owen's dad's company.
Really?
Briefly, for those on the podcast, that's our COO. And that was way, way back when. And then started college, and then I went to a small college, transferred to a slightly better, still small liberal arts college, Connecticut College. And then I graduated there in 2000.
Wow. So, I mean, first off, that was all in Massachusetts?
The Connecticut College was not.
Oh,
but,
Connecticut.
But
high school.
Yeah,
and
high school, and then, yeah, the rest of it was in Massachusetts. I grew up just outside of Boston, like an hour from Fenway Park in Brookline.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I had no idea. That's pretty funny. You got your GED. So, and you did that before you were 18?
I don't know how old I was. I might have been 18, or I don't know, because I was like a year, I was sort of on the older side for my grade, so I might have been 18. I actually don't remember.
Do you were you a good student back in high school? Is that what, or were you bored? Is that why you left? Or
no and no. I was my trajectory to here was was sort of up and down? And so it's actually sort of a funny question, because I know there's a lot of people on the sales team who dropped out and are having, you know, obviously wildly successful and doing a great job and extremely focused and motivated and you know, part of the SunGrid family. Mm-hmm. That was not me at that age. I really was having a hard time. You know, it was a real hard time in my life. And even though I you know, it was a sort of, you know, funky end around the you know, system in terms of getting the GED and getting out of there. But my dad passed away when I was a kid, and you know, just a lot of stuff, hard stuff going on at home. Mm-hmm. Nothing too horrible as far as those things go, but it was not a great time. And you know, by the time I got to college, you know, I think I was sort of good enough at the whole game to sort of do pretty well without without putting in a ton of time and energy.
Yeah,
but I was never, you know, a straight A student. Mm-hmm. By any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I had a funny conversation, and this, I don't know, this is a kind of funny one, Drew, but I had a funny sure. conversation with my daughter the other day, because she's got my ex-wife's personality in many ways. Mm-hmm. Some of mine, but in a lot of ways she's got my ex-wife's personality, which is very focused and diligent and, you know, straight A style, you mm-hmm. know, just every detail taken into consideration and getting out ahead of it. And that can be pretty stressful,
yeah.
you know, being a straight A student. So I was saying to her, I was like, look, you know, have you ever heard of the 80-20 rule? She's like, no, what's that? I was like, well, you know, it takes 20% of the work to, you know, of your effort to do 80% of the work.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you want to be an A student, you got, this is my, you know, it's sometimes it's better to be a slacker lecture
yeah.
for my child, but, which, you know, which honestly was my survival mechanism mm-hmm. for school. I had a lot of, social stuff going on,
yeah.
which was really the emphasis. And I think that was sort of me sorting out and sorting through some of the stuff from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I, unlike, you know, a lot of the, you know, most of the people at the company was not, and to some extent, I'm still not a particularly, you know, career ambitious person.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I break the mold in a lot of ways, and I sort of backed into the whole CEO thing.
Yeah,
candidly, but it seems to have worked out all right.
So when you went to college, what was your? Did you have any intention of using a degree, or? You know, did you have...
Well, no, yeah, I always thought that was kind of funny. And actually, you know, one of the other things I kind of wonder about with my kids is, you know, I think they want to go, it seems like the standard path, but I'm not convinced that it's a good path. You know, I would never... It's sort of hard because, you know, you don't want to discourage somebody from going and getting an education
yeah.
and getting, you know, their graduate degrees or whatever. But, and I think it depends a lot. You know, do you want to be a doctor?
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, then you got to go to school. But you know, if you're going to do what I did, I got a degree in psychology, you know, so there was a time in my life where I thought about being a psychologist. And so that kind of made sense for a while, but that I'd sort of left that behind by the time I graduated, but I had the credits.
Yeah.
And I actually, you know, almost had a dual degree, you know, cause I was doing a lot of creative writing and anthropology, but none of those things are, you know, obvious career moves and certainly weren't for me at the time. I was doing a lot of film. So, yeah, the answer is I didn't have a lot of ambitions around that. And I think, you know, you look at how much it cost and you look at my career trajectory and what I was gunning for, and I would say, you know, I was really looking for a social experience, I think, more than anything. And I probably could have gotten that in a lot of other cheaper ways or use that same amount of money to, you know, travel around Europe and hang out and meet people or whatever. So I'm grateful for that. I feel extremely lucky and blessed. But, yeah, there's all kinds of paths through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you could go back right now, and, you know, this is always an unrealistic question going back in time, but if you could go back, would you tell yourself to take one of those different paths?
Gosh. I might. I'd certainly present mm-hmm. the options.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that I'd try to dictate to myself or really to
anybody. Of course, yeah. It's hard to...
But... You know, which is a funny thing to say about one's own self, but yeah, I, you know, I definitely don't regret it, but mm-hmm. I do think, you know, there was a lot of options there and that weren't necessarily, you know, obvious,
mm-hmm.
that might've made more sense for me. It could have been more fun or exciting.
So how did you pivot from like getting a psychology degree into, you know, now you're incredible at business, and you're, you know, I see every day negotiating, doing all these crazy things. How did you, you know, switch directions like that?
By accident, almost. It's a funny story. I don't know if you've heard me tell this one before, but I'll hit it again. But I was up on the roofs for years, as you know. I was, you know, installing, and like I said, you know, career ambition was not my thing, really, and to a large extent still isn't. But you know, I liked the physical work and being outside, being up on the roofs, and you're out in the air. And I was actually for a long time down in North Carolina, and we'd be doing farms and stuff on these beautiful days. The weather's perfect. It was just sort of heaven. And you go home and you forget about everything. You finish your job, good feeling, this thing works, you turn it on, all right, done. You know, and I loved that. And I, you know, had two little girls, and I decided at some point we were going to move back up to Boston, and I took a solar job up there putting panels on a roof. And some people there approached me and said, hey, let's start a company. And I was pretty lukewarm on the idea, because I had the strong suspicion, which I was definitely right about, that there's more stress involved with running a company than there is with, you know, just putting panels up. Not that that's an easy job, but it's not necessarily a very high stress job for the most part. So I was real hesitant to do it, but they, you know, it seemed like they were excited about it, and they had some customers in mind. And so one night I banged out an email to and sent it to their private email. So, you know, it's, hey, here's what I think it would take to do this. And I don't know, a month later I get called into my boss's office, and he's like, you know, you're starting another company and we're firing you.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, what? You know, I denied it completely. We straight up lied, you know, just, and he, you know, but they fired me. And it turns out that they had fired this other guy for a completely separate reason, and then taken back his, like his iPad or whatever. And they had logged into his private email, because he hadn't deleted it. Like, he didn't have a chance to clear the memory. So they had logged into this other employee's private email, and they saw the email from me, and, you know, which they never admitted to, and they, you know, because it was like illegal. But so I get fired, and I'm my boss was this just very, very kind of, you know, just needed to be in control of a lot of stuff, but also extremely temperamental and fairly disrespectful to his employees. I would say, go ahead and say, very disrespectful to his employees. So kind of a horrible boss by a lot of standards. And I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast. Forgive me if he is. But at any rate, I was like, gosh, I could do better than that. So I was driving home, and I was actually kind of elated. And this is true story. And like literally, you know, they say like the clouds part. Like literally, the clouds in the sky parted, and this beam of sun came down. And the car next to me, I look over, and the license plate says Aaron on it. So I got my name on it, and I'm like, wow, this is like, you know, somebody's divine, telling me something. So I, you know, I sort of was like, I want to start a company that's the kind of company I'd want to work for, you know? And that started a journey of a lot of learning what not to do.
So what was that company, and when was, what year was that?
That was Great Sky Solar, and God, what year was that? That was, it was, you know, less than 10 years. Well, let's say I've only been in the industry for about 10 years. So that was maybe, I've been doing this year, year and a half. And Bright Planet was maybe like 2 years before that. And that was like a year and a half, 2 years before that. So it was like, 5 years ago, 6 years ago or something. It wasn't that long ago.
Wow, that's pretty crazy. So you were doing the installs for about 3-4 years before that?
That sounds right. Yep.
And Great Sky, was it a similar idea as SunGrade, similar model, or?
Very, very different. You know, so like I said, I started with like, hey, this is the kind of company I want to work for. And as most people who have worked with me a bit know, I'm kind of a dirty hippie when it comes right down to it. As far as, you know, I'm pretty progressive and sometimes, you know, almost, you know, pretty far to the liberal side of the spectrum. And, you know, I had a lot of ideas and ideals about doing something in a way that was, you know, really different from the way it's been done, which I still have, you know, it's sort of how, where I start on a lot of things. But, you know, particularly, you know, I wanted to make it employee owned, and just, you know, I had this idea about kind of more of a flat structure and flat, you know, sort of everybody's an equal kind of thing. And I brought on people who were really excited about that, and I think even in some ways pushed it even, you know, a fair bit beyond where I had in terms of, you know, really progressive ideas. And you know, I don't think that those ideas were wildly wrong, but I certainly didn't know how to implement them well, and there was so much I didn't know, and so I sort of lacked confidence and knowledge, I guess, were two huge things. And then the company itself lacked a certain amount of accountability, which I think probably stemmed from the fact that I lacked confidence and knowledge. And so you had a kind of flat structure with a lack of accountability. The knowledge part we kind of resolved by, you know, figuring it out, which was fun. I mean, it was actually, there was a lot of fun and a lot of, especially for the first like 6 months or a year of that company, it was a blast. I mean, we made no money. Mm-hmm. It was just a disaster on that level, but it was wildly fun. We were out and, you know, putting panels on roofs together and hanging out and laughing and, you know, trying to figure out how the hell to get leads and where they were going to come from and what, you know, just teaching ourselves this, that, and every other thing. Every facet, all the stuff, we just had to learn new things. And yeah, and that was an extraordinary experience, but it was ultimately, you know, ended up being very stressful because, you know, I didn't feel, you know, there was sort of interpersonal dynamics that were challenging, and I didn't probably handle those very well. And I, you know, and once the culture of like not really being accountable kind of got ingrained in there, it was sort of, some people were working really hard and some weren't, and it was always like, you never wanted to be like, well, you're not working hard, because like, well, maybe they were, and a little hard to tell. And you know, just kind of got hard. And then on top of that, I think the biggest thing that I didn't know at that job was, you know, how do you create a sale? Like, what's your venue? You know, so now we know there's kind of inside sales and there's direct sales and there's channel partners and whatever. There's a lot of different directions you can go, EPC, but you know, we kind of dabbled in all of those, you know, everything, including like knocking doors and stuff, but we really didn't know what we were doing, and we never succeeded in finding a specific strategy for driving, you know, finding new customers. So when I left, it was sort of hobbling along.
Yeah.
And it continued to. I mean, it was a really good, dedicated group of people, particularly the woman who took over as CEO, who I believe is still running the company in some form. And they won Best of Boston last year, which I can take absolutely no credit for. But,
that's cool, though.
Yeah, it's exciting. So,
and then from there, you learned a lot at that company, and you decided, like, you know, you didn't feel defeated or anything. You decided to go on to start another one.
Yeah, I mean, that's the most generous narrative.
What would be your version of it?
You know, the exit was hard. You know, I didn't handle it well. Somebody approached me and said, "Hey, you know, who was really, really successful salesperson from SolarCity, one of the sort of integral people of getting their East Coast division started up," approached me and sort of said, "Hey, like, I want to start a company."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I very briefly said, "Hey, well, maybe you should think about coming on at Great Sky." But I, it was honestly, like, you know, kind of was like, you know, this is my chance to get out of what was starting to feel like a really hard situation. Certainly financially, it was a really hard situation. And they were in very, very different culture. The person who approached me and Great Sky were just sort of opposite ends of the spectrum. And I was a little starry-eyed because, you know, Great Sky was this little teeny company that really was struggling. And this guy had, you know, started and run sales teams selling, you know, huge, huge numbers, huge volume. So I was a little starry-eyed, as you kind of might expect.
Yeah.
And when Great Sky sort of balked at it and the people there were like, nah, and I was already kind of burned out, I decided to start up with this guy, and we had one other partner who I'm still very close with, who was sort of in and then out and in and out, but we just did it. You know, we jumped in at the deep end, and you know, the transition was very hard, as you might imagine. Whenever you start a company and then leave to start another company that's doing the same thing, you know, it's not like, you know, PayPal and SpaceX.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, to this day, I do have some regrets about how I handled that and how that went down, but. You know, Bright Planet Solar was the next company, and that was, again, you know, sort of starting over on the learning curve, because I had taught myself so much about the industry, but really very little about being a CEO of a company, especially a, you know, more conventionally structured company and a larger one.
Would you say that at that point in your career, you had used any of your psychological training from college?
No, I always thought it was funny that, like, the association with, like, the training in psychology that somehow gives you additional insight into the human psyche, which you would think it might, and it certainly gives you some models and some ideas, but I don't think it gives you any significant, at least from my perspective, any particularly significant insight. More labels and strategies and stuff, but. So I think the honest truth is, no, I chose psychology because I was curious about people, mm-hmm. you know, and curious about particularly, you know, the human, the sort of more personal aspects of the human experience. And, you know, that curiosity and that I always have wanted to engage people and ideas and things on a very deep level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was helpful, but I don't think the actual ideas that I encountered within the, you know, the psychology department, yeah. you know, were particularly helpful.
Interesting. Now, like, you know, that psychology is very different from business and solar. And were you entrepreneurial back then as well, or were you just, you know, did this solar thing just kind of really come out of nowhere?
Well, I mean, I think yes and no. Mm-hmm. You know, I have always been sort of inquisitive and curious and a little bit, you know, outside the box, you know, and in some ways that's been hard, you know, when you feel like you don't fit in or you're not sort of a part of the group in the conventional sense. And in other ways, it kind of gives you an advantage, you know, when I think everybody can relate to that to some extent, you know, both being, you know, everybody's been a part, almost everybody, I assume, has been a part of a group, you know, mm-hmm. in one way or another, but probably almost everybody's also been left out of a group in one form or another. You know, it's hard to get through any substantial power light without a fair bit of experience of both. But, for me, that the left out part, you know, while it was hard at times, it also gives you the ability to kind of view somebody as something from the outside, you know, as an outsider. And I do feel like that's, you know, part of the, I don't know, it's a weird way to say it, but in some ways that you could say that's part of the entrepreneurial toolkit, you know, is getting far enough outside the sort of scope of what's happening to be able to assess a way to do something that is either an improvement upon or a replication of something that's succeeding, right? Or not something that's not succeeding, but, you know, it's an improvement upon something that's not succeeding or replication of something that is succeeding and really going out and doing it. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, so I think that was, you know, that and the sort of, you know, the curiosity and the sort of drive to figure out, mm-hmm. you know, how to make that happen. Those are both part of my life, my entire life. The ability and the desire to lead a group of people was not something I was familiar with. You know, I was never an athlete, which is a sort of natural way to experience that. And I was not career focused. You know, I loved being up on a roof as part of a little teeny, you know, 3-person team. Yeah. And I wasn't particularly interested in being a crew lead on the 3-person team. You know, just telling what to do. You know, but once I started doing that, you know, I don't really know, and I have to almost ask. I have to ask you or the other people around me, but I think it became an asset that I'm not really like wanting to be in charge of everything. Mm-hmm. I, in fact, somewhat feel kind of awkward about it at times. It's not, and I think that actually in this company, I think there's a lot of that. There's a lot of people who lead not because they want power, you know, or to have control, but more like, you know, more because it's just like, hey, I can help us collectively accomplish our goals. It's more of a, like, you know, sort of de facto thing that happens by focusing on the collective goal. And I think that has, you know, been one of my strengths. And so even though I came to it really late, because I wasn't really focused on, you know, group leadership really, or you know, any of that kind of stuff. I do think that it was like, oh, well, it turns out that, you know, I like working together as people. And when you put yourself in a leadership position, then you have the opportunity to really, you know, those aspects of, you know, if the group comes together and achieves its goal, then, you know, you're considered successful, yep. Which is, I always think, really ironic, because, you know, intrinsic in that, I mean, the fundamental truth of that is that, you know, a successful leader is, you know, doing a very small amount of the actual succeeding, so to speak, mm-hmm. You know, like that it's actually the group of people coming together. And I think it's mostly removing the obstacles to, you know, it's not so much like, it's like, you know, setting up a circumstance that's conducive to working together. It's not, yep, so much like, oh, I lifted this thing personally and carried it up the hill, mm-hmm, the way I think it almost the people imagine. It's like the CEO. It's like that, you know, this person, and they, you know, people do it with sports and with, you know, with other CEOs and with editors. It's like,
yeah,
you know, there's this Herculean human being who's all seeing. It's like, no, they're actually probably just like, figure out how to surround themselves with really intelligent people and probably had a fair bit of luck and to give to boot, yeah, you know?
Yep. Now, you mentioned that feeling of like being an outsider of a group. If you were to give one piece of advice to someone that might feel like that regularly, mm-hmm, and who might feel like they want to get into business or something like that, mm-hmm, do you have any piece of advice that you think would be valuable for them?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. You know, I think we live in a time where increasingly, you know, your generation and you know, the more awakened folks amongst us are recognizing that, you know, there's beauty in all types, you know, that there's not a way to be. And I think the farther back you go, at least in recent history of our culture, you know, the more rigidly defined the categories were and the more the sort of social consequences were, the harsher they were for not fitting in those categories. And, you know, I do think there's a tremendous beauty, you know, whether or not it's in business or whatever your particular gift is, being on the outside, and everybody is in some way, but anytime you are, it's, you know, there's a kind of rare beauty to it. One of the sort of most respected people in my life sort of says, I've heard her say, you know, you know, to people who I think kind of fit that mold, is, you know, they're like a rare orchid.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's just, you know, there's just this tremendous beauty to being unique, mm-hmm, you know, and all of us are. So honor that, I guess, is sort of my most basic piece of advice. You know, be true to who you are. There is tremendous beauty in that. And the deeper, you know, you can learn to be comfortable with yourself, whoever you are, whatever you are, the more joy and love you'll have in your life, and the more joy and love you can bring to other people. And, you know, that's, you know, it just sort of comes naturally from that. And you can relax in your own skin. You know, it's okay to be that. And mm-hmm, you can just know, you know, I think the fear with being an outsider is it's like, it's not okay. We have so much social programming, you know, so much of which is to fit in. And I think, you know, evolutionarily, that was, you know, a survival mechanism. I mean, if you got excluded from the group, I mean, there's, you know, it was literally the punishment was a sort of corporal punishment was, in its worst form, was typically you have to leave the community,
mm-hmm,
you know, which is now, it's like, oh, I'll just move somewhere else. You know, I didn't like you anyway. Yeah. But, you know, then it was like, well, now you're going to go out in the wilderness and die,
mm-hmm,
you know, and so socially, that's, you know, I think very deeply ingrained in us that we, you know, we gotta be liked and we gotta fit in, and you know, and that's, and it feels good to be liked and it feels good to fit in, but you know, I think, you know, the most important thing that we can do in the context of our sort of own selves is try to honor who we are, you know, and find out who will meet you there,
mm-hmm,
whatever that means. And that's not really business advice, but I think, you know, within that context, you know, you may be an, you know, You may be extraordinary, gifted, and eccentric salesperson. You may be a not very eccentric salesperson. You may not be a salesperson, you know, or you may have other entrepreneurial skills or other skills that aren't about business, you know. So I think those things become sort of self-evident, often slowly, sometimes over decades, as they did in my case, you know, what your real strengths and weaknesses are.
That's I think that's great advice. And my last question for you is, you know, up until this point, you found, you said that you kind of backed into the CEO role, didn't really see it coming from the beginning. And, you know, you've obviously grown to understand more of like what your skill set is, like we've been talking about. With that, do you see yourself, have you charted more of a future going forward, or do you think you're going to keep kind of rolling with it the way you have been?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been pretty open, you know. I don't talk about it much with the team, and it's, you know, kind of evolving on timeline, but I've been pretty open about, you know, I don't think I will be, you know, I think I will always, you know, think I'll have a role to be supportive at the company, but I think, you know, my longer term goals is sort of to hand it off to some of the, you know, the people who also helped start it to some extent. You know, I don't want to abandon it by any stretch of the imagination. I love the company and the people, but you know, I think my longer term goal is to find new ways to help. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know what that means specifically. I've got some ideas and some people I talk to about this kind of stuff, but, you know, I feel that this is a pretty harrowing time in some ways. It's great to be surrounded by a lot of people who are working proactively to do something about it as best as we can, at least as far as the solar panels are concerned. But you know, I was saying to somebody just today, I think, you know, there's 70 million refugees almost on the planet right now. So that's 1% of the entire planet, which is a real, to me, that's a real like stick in your throat number. It's an inconceivably large number of people who, you know, are in hard places. And then the climate change issues are just so huge and probably in some ways related to the refugees. And you know, the environmental issues are so huge. And so like by my nature, since I was a small child, I've always been kind of like trying to figure out, well, how can I do something really significant? And, you know, I think there's a balance to be found there. 'Cause I think sometimes, you know, one of the challenges with businesses and certainly with my thinking is that, you know, you can have a kind of Lorax situation. I don't know if you know the story of the Lorax. It's a sort of famous Dr. Seuss story about, you know, a sort of everyday business, you know, classic just archetype of like a business guy. It's Dr. Seuss, so it's you know, kind of colorful and played up. But, you know, he shows up in town and there's these beautiful trees, and you know, it turns out if you cut one down, then they're like, the tufts of them are like, make the most exquisite clothing, you know. So he quickly pulls up shop in this paradise and starts about, you know, chopping down the trees and making clothing. And it's sort of not such a bad idea. It's like, hey, okay, let's do this. And of course they're selling as fast as they can, and he's wildly successful, so they keep, you know, growing and growing and biggering and biggering, as Dr. Seuss says. And you know, you can sort of see where this is going. It ends up being this incredibly destructive company, which I think is an archetype of the sort of classic large corporation. And so I think, you know, the biggering and biggering, well, it's sort of in my blood to try to find, you know, bigger, you know, big solutions to big problems. I just think in that way. But I do think it has to be heavily moderated. And I think that's, you know, just one piece. You know, you didn't ask for this particular piece of advice, but I think it's really important is that, you know, as exciting as it is, you know, to want to be and maybe even become, you know, a really large corporation, the responsibilities are immense, especially now. And so, you know, solar is probably a better way than most to do that. But, you know, when I think about the next thing, I do try to think of big solutions, but I also have started to, you know, learn that it's very important for me to hold you know, more than one thing in that context, because it, you know, we're just in a time where, you know, we consume so much, you know, as a species, we're just consuming so much. And you know, the best intentioned, you know, thing is if you do a whole bunch of it. You know, I'm even thinking about Bitcoin, right? Which is this great idea, essentially, sort of, you know, a currency that nobody's in control of. So it's, you know, it's the currency for everybody. No corporation or government can control it. But, you know, just these articles that are coming about the extraordinarily, you know, destructive power of the massive amounts of energy consumed in mining Bitcoin, which are now skyrocketing. And so, you know, there again, you have an idea that's sort of the best intentions, you know, but may end up being, and already is actually, I think it's like, you know, more than 0.1% of the total electricity consumed on the entire planet is exclusively just for mining Bitcoin.
Wow.
Which, yeah, it's an inconceivable, I mean, that sounds like a very small percentage, but that's just a, you know, that's for that all the electricity for the entire planet.
Yeah.
So, and they're expecting that number to grow a lot. So I think, you know, that would be my, you know, one of my, you know, core things that I'm trying to sort of honor personally, but also would say is that, you know, handing the baton to the next generation is, you know, if you want to do something big and you want to grow, that's very exciting. And I think, you know, it's a sort of very classically youthful enthusiasm for like, let's do this. And, you know, let's really make something. And I think that's awesome. But, you know, it's so incumbent upon us to really, you know, the responsibility that we're taking on by doing that is so huge now. We just have to find and really be as considerate and proactive as we can, you know, around the circumstances that we're in, which are fairly challenging, you know?
Yeah, certainly. There's a lot of challenges to face, but wow, that is unbelievable information there. Do you have any last request for the audience listening? If you asked them to do something,
you know what, go out, have a, you know, just you know, I'd say bring your, you know, and this is maybe a little hippy dippy, but you know, bring your love, bring your joy to what you do, show up for it completely and deeply, and you know, I think, you know, and show up for the people and the things in your life, and you know, I think that's, you know, it's sort of pithy, and I'm not really sure. I didn't have one like sort of short one sentence thing lined up for you, but you know, I think that's my biggest takeaway. I guess is yeah, you know, do it completely.
Well, I think the audience is going to get a lot out of this entire conversation. Thank you so much for doing this for me. I really appreciate it. And it's time for us to get over to the Cheesecake Factory. So
that's good. Thank you.